Yo, what's up, y'all? It's JB Hicks back with the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. It is the preseason podcast of the year. Thank you all for listening today. I'm recording this on a Wednesday morning. And it may be broken up a little bit over the course of the day. We'll see. But I wanted to get back at you guys. How'd you like the Super Bowl, huh? Yeah. Wasn't the best game. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty at all. I'm not going to waste any time. I'm just going to dive right into to Super Bowl 48. The Seattle Seahawks. What the Seahawks did to the Denver Broncos on Sunday was criminal. And by now, you probably have all heard, you know, every analysis, and you've, you know, by this time, if you care at all about football, you've probably heard everything there is to know about Super Bowl 48 and how it went down and everything. And I'm just going to supplement that with my two cents real quick. Obviously, the Seahawks were the better team. I had the Seattle Seahawks winning the Super Bowl before the start of the season, so allow me to give myself a pat on the back there for that. You know, not to say that I know everything, because I definitely don't. If you may recall, my AFC pick was the Houston Texans, and they wound up with the first pick in the draft. So by no means am I above pointing out my flaws. But I will go ahead and give myself a pat on the back and attaboy for getting that pick right. I had the Seahawks all the way. If you listen to the podcast, not our last podcast, but the one before that, that was right after the AFC and NFC Championship game. I pretty much thought that the NFC Championship game was the de facto Super Bowl. Those were the two best teams, San Francisco and Seattle. I would have actually picked either one of those NFC teams over either of the AFC teams that came out. So had it been San Francisco and New England, I would have taken San Francisco. Had it been San Francisco and Denver, I would have took San Francisco. So, but we saw the Seahawks were just playing on another level. They just played lights out football in all three phases of the game. If any of you happen to read our pre-Super Bowl article on the site where we talked about why we thought Seattle would win, you would have seen there that I liked the fact that Seattle had a better special teams unit. I did mention that. It wasn't, you know, a headline in the article, so to speak, but it was. I made note of it. But beyond that, just the defense of the Seattle Seahawks, I felt like, was not getting enough credit. And their ability to take the ball away was something that I felt like could not be overlooked. When you have a defense that's first in the league in takeaways, first in the league in fewest points allowed, first in the league in fewest yards allowed, eighth in sacks, first in interceptions, you have a team that is built to go up against a team like Denver. And when you look at how the two teams matched up on paper, you have a Broncos team that has these very talented receivers, but you have Seattle, who has a secondary that is as physical as any secondary in the league. And they're big guys. I mean, these guys are as big as Demaryius Thomas, if not bigger. They're as big as Julius Thomas, if not bigger, and faster, and equally skilled. So while Denver typically had this wide receiver advantage pretty much every week that they went out there and played, they weren't going to have that same advantage against the Seahawks. And all Seattle really had to do was find a way to get some pressure on Peyton Manning, and it was going to be curtains. And that's exactly what happened. They were able to get pressure with 3- and 4-man rushes. They didn't have to blitz. They could then drop back 7 or 8 guys into coverage, and they were all over it. I mean, they had ball-hawking guys in the secondary. Their linebackers were flying to the football. It was just a dominant performance by the Seattle Seahawks. You can't say enough about it. You have to take your hat off to Pete Carroll, to Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator, who probably should have wound up being the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, but we'll save that for another day. And, I mean, what more can you say, man? Denver looked completely out of wits from the first snap of the game. You've heard mixed reviews on who's to blame for that snap, you know, and then when the snap went over Peyton's head and goes into the end zone for a safety. I don't know who was to blame for that, really. But it didn't matter because Denver had, you know, 59 minutes and 48 seconds to come back from a 2-0 deficit, and obviously that did not happen. So some people try to talk about how demoralizing that safety was right out the gate, and it was, but that was not where the game was lost. On the series after that, you, if you recall, Seattle kicked a field goal after they got the ball back from the punt. And then they gave it back to Denver. And then Denver had that one play. I think it was like a second and long or something like that. It's like second and eight. They hit Demaryius Thomas on a crossing route. And Cam Chancellor lowered the boom on him. That told you everything you needed to know about that game. That hit, that, you know, just the physicality of the Seattle secondary. And even the 12th man, hey now, 12th man, they may have made an impact on that game as well. It did seem loud. It did seem to be, you know, 75% of the crowd sounded like they were going for Seattle watching on television. That's what it sounded like. And so all these things kind of mounted against Denver, which was crazy because if there was ever a team that seemed like a team of destiny, it was the Denver Broncos.
The Denver Broncos.
Denver had everything that could have lined up Denver's way, specifically Peyton Manning's way, lined up for them this season. I mean, they had some injuries, and I'm not going to, you know, totally discredit them for that. But when you look at the way that their offensive skill position players came together, the contribution they got from Julius Thomas, who was like a first-time starter, Wes Welker coming in as a free agent, you know, Manning just having another year under his belt with Thomas and Decker, and just the offense just running on, just it was like water all season long, and 55 touchdowns and a passing yards record for Manning, and you know, everything just lined up. And then when you go into the playoffs, they get the number one seed, perhaps due in some respect to the referees maybe giving the Patriots a raw deal here and there. That's debatable, but Denver winds up with the number one seed, and then they play, you know, a 9-7 San Diego team in the second round, a good team, but you know, they're not a heavyweight in the NFL. I think we can all admit that. And then they go up against the Patriots at home. Tom Brady historically has struggled in Denver. You have the Patriots, who were just a shell of themselves as far as injuries are concerned, which is why I put all the expectations on the Broncos to win that game. And they did. And they took care of business. And Peyton was fantastic. And you can't take anything away from them as far as that's concerned. But and then the weather factor, those two games in January in Denver, Colorado, the weather was great. And then we have this outdoor Super Bowl in New York, and the weather's even better. It was like 50 degrees at kickoff, and there was no wind and very little precipitation. I think it rained during the halftime show more than at any other point in the game. Everything kind of lined up for Denver and this superstar offense of theirs, and lo and behold, it didn't work out. And I think that kind of brings me to Peyton Manning. And, you know, I could go into more detail about the game itself. I thought the MVP probably should have gone to Percy Harvin, only because the defense was so dominant. And not to say Malcolm Smith didn't deserve it, but the defense was so dominant that there was, you could have given it to so many different guys. You could have given it to Cam Chancellor and it would have been deserved. You could have given it to Cliff Averill and it would have been deserved. I mean, there was just such a cast of characters on that Seattle defense that has made them so unique all season long on each level of the defense. And they have so much depth. You could have given it to anybody. The entire defense really deserved the MVP. I didn't think you could really narrow it down to one guy. And so if you take the defense out of the equation for that reason, that's how I landed on Percy Harvin, because he made the most impactful plays, I felt like, when the game was still undecided, even at the start of the second half when they had this, you know, 22-point lead or whatever it was. He takes the opening kickoff to the crib, and that's it. That's the ball game. I tweeted ball game out that night and right at that moment, and that was it. So, but aside from that, you know, it was just they just landed haymaker after haymaker, and Denver didn't know what to do. And so again, that leads me to Peyton Manning, man. Listen, anybody that's been following me or been following hiphopsportsreport.com or following us on Twitter at HHSReport knows how I feel about Peyton Manning. I've been telling my friends and people close to me for 10 years that this guy tends to come up small in big spots. Now, I'm not going to crush him for losing to Seattle, because Seattle was the best team. I think Seattle would have beaten anybody. And nobody on Denver played particularly well. So I'm not going to lay it all on the feet of Peyton Manning for that reason. I'm not going to just destroy him today. But the biggest reason why I'm not going to destroy him after that Super Bowl performance was because, to me, that performance and his performance throughout the entire postseason embodied everything that we should already know about who Peyton Manning is. This is a guy that was fantastic against the Patriots in the AFC title game. threw for 400 yards, had a passer rating of like, I don't know, like 120 or something like that. He was pretty much lights out against New England when nobody was in his face, when the weather was perfect, when he had no pressure, when the opposing offense really couldn't get going and there was not a need for him to score more points. You know, he was comfortable. And when he's comfortable, Peyton will pick you apart with the best of them. And then when you saw in the San Diego game, it was the same thing. He never really faced that much pressure. I think he did not get sacked once in those first two playoff games. He got hit only once. He didn't get sacked at all. There was not a lot of adversity for him to overcome. And so when there's not a lot of adversity to overcome, Peyton Manning is as good as anybody I've ever seen play the position of quarterback. But that's not what makes quarterbacks great. When it comes down to the come down, I need a guy that's going to be great in thick and thin. I need a leader of men. I need a guy who's going to rally the troops when you get down 2-0 or 5-0. I need a guy who's going to be able to lead that fourth quarter comeback in January or in February just the same way as he does in September and October. So what we saw from Peyton Manning in this postseason, essentially, was we saw the good and we saw the bad, the yin and the yang. We saw the flashes against San Diego and New England, even in crunch time against the San Diego Chargers. He was making plays. But I kept picking against the Broncos because I knew sooner or later that those chickens were going to come home to roost, y'all. I just did. Because this is what he's shown us for the better part of the last 20 years. I don't understand why people keep giving this guy a pass on who he's been since college. He struggled in some of his biggest games in college. He leaves Tennessee. Tennessee wins the national championship. I'm not saying he was the reason why they didn't win, but he didn't help the cause losing to Florida every year. Then he gets to the NFL, and we see the same thing. You put all these weapons around him. He's playing with Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark. He got a year of Marshall Faulk, for whatever that's worth. He goes out to Denver. He's playing with the Four Horsemen. People like to talk about how he hasn't had great coaching. That's not true, because he had Tony Dungy for the majority of his career. Tony Dungy took another team to the NFC Championship game. He had John Fox in Denver. John Fox took the Panthers to the Super Bowl about 6 or 7 years ago. So it's not like he's been devoid of any great teachers on the sidelines. That's just a fallacy if people are saying that. You have the defensive unit, which he hasn't necessarily always played with the best defenses, but he's had some pretty outstanding defensive players on his teams that he's played with for many years. Guys like Freeney and Robert Mathis and Bob Sanders and these guys. It was the defense that carried Peyton Manning to the one Super Bowl championship that he has. And in that entire four-game playoff run in 2006, going into 2007, Peyton had 3 touchdowns and 7 interceptions in those 4 games. He threw 1 touchdown and had 1 pick in the Super Bowl that year. He was not impressive at any point in that playoff run other than the second half of the AFC title game when they came back and beat the Patriots. And even then, Peyton threw a pick 6 in that game. Yeah, I mean, there's never been a time where Peyton Manning has stepped up in the biggest of moments and just grabbed victory with his bare hands. I mean, and that's what we want to see. That's kind of who our culture is. That's what we want to see from our quarterbacks. That's what we want to see from our leaders. And this guy just hasn't done that. But the problem that I have more than anything is the fact that people have been trying to anoint him since day one. And that's the biggest beef that I have with Peyton Manning. I think Peyton Manning is the classiest guy in the NFL. He seems like a very nice man. There's not much to not like about how he carries himself off the field as far as saying the right things to the media most of the time and just being an all-around good guy. He seems like he's perfected that craft, and he's has this impeccable, engaging personality off the field. And I think more than anything, people just love to love Peyton Manning. And I just feel like the media has lied to you all, basically. Because he is one of the all-time greats, but he's not the greatest. And I got news for you. If he would have won Super Bowl 48 and beaten Seattle, it would have definitely helped him, and it would have enhanced his legacy for sure. But it would not have bolted him to the number one slot on the all-time pantheon of quarterbacks. It would not have done it. That one game would not have taken him from wherever he was on the list, to number one. And that's what they made you, they tried to trick you into believing that. ESPN, all those guys on the primetime countdown crew or whatever it was, they were all saying that after, you know, they all pretty much agreed that if a Denver victory means Peyton Manning becomes unquestionably the greatest quarterback in NFL history. Why? I mean, I just haven't seen enough. Because even if he wins that game, it doesn't take away from all of his years of coming up short when he had teams that were suspected to be better. You know, he was favored in the Super Bowl this year. Yeah, he always has these teams that are on paper the favorite to win. He's got the home field advantage more often than not, and he loses. And I don't even know why it is. Now, it's not all his fault, because sometimes there's been games where, you know, he had the big 300-yard, five touchdown games early in his career against like Kansas City or somebody back in like the early 2000s. He's had those type of lights out playoff games, and he's had moments. The AFC Championship game against the Jets a few years ago, once he figured out Rex Ryan's defense, it was over. It was lights out, and he couldn't be touched that day. He couldn't be touched 2 weeks ago when they played the Patriots. He was lights out in that game. So we've seen these flashes from him, but we see they're not flashes in the regular season. That's just who he is in the regular season. But when it comes to the playoffs, we don't tend to see that consistently. We don't see that consistent level of greatness. Peyton's the one who raised the bar so high in the regular season. So people like me, we expect to see something similar to that same level of play when the competition is at its best and when the stakes are at their highest. But we don't always get that from Peyton Manning. And I don't know why that is. You know, people have all sorts of theories. I don't know exactly why that is. But in any case, people cannot sit here and continue to make excuses for him. I have people that have argued with me for years. You know, Peyton supporters that have literally argued with me for years about how it's all just circumstances. Like, Peyton's just a victim of circumstance. And so when he wins, he gets all the credit, and everybody says he's the man. He gets all the commercials and the contracts and the endorsements, and he gets all the praise, and everybody says he's the greatest of all time when he does great things in the regular season or whatever. And then when he loses, it's always circumstantial. Oh, well, he didn't get enough protection. Oh, well, his defense didn't show up that day. Oh, well, his receivers were dropping passes. Oh, well, Raheem Moore played the worst defense you've ever seen, and he got beat by Jacoby Jones. To me, all those things are occupational hazards that come with playing quarterback. Football is the ultimate team sport. You need everybody moving in unison, in one direction, to get to this goal. It takes 53 guys to do it. So, I mean, it's not easy. But when you look at the position of quarterback, it's the one position on the football field that has the most control over the outcome of each game. And that's why we give all the quarterbacks all the attention and all the credit. And that's why they deserve the lion's share of the blame more often than not when the team fails to perform. I always equate Peyton to Michael Jordan in the sense that people consider Michael Jordan the greatest of all time. Well, why? Mainly because he won 6 championships in 8 years. But additionally, he's got all the statistics, and he's got all the hardware, individual hardware, trophies, and etc. And in the biggest moments against the best competition, he came through. He's got buzzer beaters in the playoffs. He's got buzzer beaters in the finals. He's got defensive plays in the finals that won games. He's given up. He's had game-winning assists in the NBA finals. Jordan, and you can make an argument that he's not the greatest basketball player of all time, but I think the reason why the majority of America seems to agree that Jordan is the greatest is because when you add it all up, Michael Jordan's resume stacks up better than anybody else's. And when I say resume, I'm not just talking about his career list of accomplishments. I'm talking about the eye test. I'm talking about leadership. I'm talking about intangibles. I'm talking about winning. Okay? And you put all that stuff together, that's why Michael Jordan is considered the GOAT. You can't be considered the greatest of all time at any sport when you only won once. Period. You can't do it. And you can't be considered the greatest of all time when that one time that you won, you kind of backed into it and lucked out. I mean, you can't do that either. So, to me, there was no way that Peyton Manning was going to be the greatest of all time if he won that game, even though that would have given him 2 Super Bowls. I still didn't think he would have been the greatest. And to that end, I didn't think Peyton Manning was going to drop out of the top 10 quarterback list of all time either if he lost. And he got murdered on Sunday. He got murked out by Seattle on Sunday, right? But even the biggest Peyton skeptic, such as myself, I'm not going to use this performance and then say, okay, he's no longer one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time. I'm not going to do that because he is. He's great. But I've always maintained that Peyton Manning was in the top 10 of quarterbacks ever, but he's closer to 10 than he is to number one. And I had people arguing me on Facebook for 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, and I hope they're listening. You know who you are. People arguing me for 2 weeks talking about if I didn't have Peyton in the top five as a top five quarterback of all time, that I'm insane. Why am I insane? Because Peyton Manning goes out and throws 7 touchdowns against the Ravens in September, that makes him the greatest of all time? I don't think so. I don't judge greatness that way. You know? Imagine if LeBron James had still not won an NBA championship to this point. People would not be considering him one of the all-time greats just yet because he still hadn't proven it on the highest level. I'm still waiting on Peyton Manning to prove it on the highest level. And we're going into like year 17 of his career. And that's basically where I shake out on Peyton Manning at this point right now, y'all. If you watched, like I said, the pregame show, everybody said he would have been the greatest of all time if he won. They said the exact same thing when he was with the Colts and they played the Saints in the Super Bowl. Everybody said, if Peyton Manning wins this game, if he wins this game, he goes down as unquestionably the greatest of all time. I didn't buy it then either. And if you look at what happened, he went out, he's the favorite, he plays New Orleans, they lose the game, he throws the big pick six in that game. Since then, he went to the playoffs a couple more times with Indianapolis, and then once with Denver, I believe. Either he had 2 or 3 playoff runs in between. And he lost in the first game each time, once again. And so, you fast forward to this year, he goes out and he has this monster season, 55 touchdowns and breaking all these records and stuff. And now all of a sudden, we're back to square one. We're back to where we were a few years ago, where it's like, if he wins this game, he's the greatest of all time? No, because he hadn't done anything to differentiate himself from where he was in 2009 or 2010, whatever that was. All he'd done was had one of the greatest statistical regular seasons in NFL history. And kudos to him for that. I mean, that's no small feat. So my intention is not to diminish that accomplishment, more so to recognize the fact that he was always capable of that. Peyton Manning was always capable of putting up insane astronomical numbers during the regular season, because that's basically what he's done his entire career. It would almost be, going back to LeBron, it would almost be, imagine LeBron had not won a championship to this point yet, but he was averaging like 35 a game. Nobody would care, because he would hypothetically would have still not won in the playoffs. So it's kind of like, what difference does it make? Like, you're doing the same thing now that you were doing before, just at a little bit of a higher level. But when you're trying to distinguish the greatest of the greats of all time, you have to split a few hairs. And that's why I'm being critical, because you have to split hairs. You have to, with a fine-tooth comb, go through the resume. And again, not just the list of career accomplishments on Wikipedia, but you have to go through and look at his performance in certain games, look at certain adversity that a player had to face and how they responded, what kind of leadership they showed. You know, when their teammates looked to them when things didn't look good, you know, what kind of classic performances they put forth when the stakes were higher. Those are the things that true legends are made of. And that's when you have to decide who the greatest of the greats are. That's how you have to judge it, as far as I'm concerned. Because anybody can be great in week 9 against the Tennessee Titans. Like, fine. You know what I'm saying? You did great that day. You did great in the regular season. But we're talking about all-time greats, y'all. All-time. You have Montana. He's got his 4-0 Super Bowl record, spotless, right? And he has one of the highest playoff winning percentages of all time. And then when you look at, and you know, Montana is viewed by many as the greatest quarterback ever. I think he's definitely up there. I've always been a Tom Brady supporter. Because, as I said on the website before, y'all, there's no qualifiers with Tom Brady. They call Peyton Manning the greatest regular season quarterback of all time. That's the nickname that's been attached to him now. That's such a backhanded compliment. You don't have any idea. I mean, that is such a disrespectful thing to say to somebody that's as great as Peyton Manning is, to say, you're the greatest of when it doesn't mean all that much, you know? That's like being the greatest preseason quarterback of all time. What if I said Brandon Whedon was the greatest preseason quarterback of all time? Because he actually did light it up in the preseason this past year. But look what he did in the regular season. Nobody cared about what you did in the preseason because those games don't matter. And the regular season games matter more than the preseason. And the playoffs matter more than the regular season. But when you look at somebody like Brady, he's great in the regular season and he's great in the playoffs. He has records in the regular season and he has records in the playoffs. He has MVPs in the regular season and he has MVPs in the Super Bowl. Multiple of both. You know what I'm saying? There's no drop-off. But there's this drop-off with Peyton Manning that people just love to overlook. And I just don't understand it. And they want to give him credit for being an offensive coordinator with the team and all this stuff. But then when things don't go right, when he's calling the wrong plays, when the plays that he's calling ain't working, people want to look the other way. I just don't understand it. To me, Peyton Manning is Alex Rodriguez, minus the cheating. It's the same dude. I had a buddy of mine comparing to Jerry West in the weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. I think he's more Alex Rodriguez. Because A-Rod put up all the stats you could ever want to see. But when it was the bottom of the eighth, and the bases were loaded with two outs, and his team was down two runs, you knew he was going to strike out. Because he's done it so many times before. And one year he managed to get it right. And he got his championship to get that, you know, you're not a champion label off his back. But by and large, Alex Rodriguez, who's been playing baseball for about as long as Peyton Manning's been playing professional football, Alex Rodriguez came up small when the game was on the line and in the playoffs. And that's what Peyton Manning is. And that's fine, you know, assuming A-Rod never cheated. He was going to go on to the Hall of Fame anyway, just like Peyton Manning deserves to go on to the Hall of Fame. And A-Rod was going to go down as one of the great shortstops and third basemen of all time. Just like Peyton Manning should go down as one of the great quarterbacks of all time. But we're talking about the greatest. The greatest of this generation, he's not. The greatest of all time, he's definitely not. He doesn't pass the eye test. I don't see the leadership from him. I don't see him rallying the troops on the sideline. I always see his face buried in charts when his team's not on the field. Or, when his team gets down, he sits there with the Manning face and just sulks. I don't want my leader to sulk on the sidelines when the game gets tight, or when something doesn't go as planned, and he just want to sit there with that goofy look on his face. I don't need that. I need a guy that's gonna rally the troops. Or, you see him after the game and he throws teammates under the bus. He's done that before. He's thrown offensive linemen under the bus. He's thrown his kicker under the bus. In the media, I mean, this is years ago he did it, but I mean, that's what he's done. Or we see him and the Colts management go and complain to the league about the defensive backs of New England being too physical. And then they get the rules changed. Now he can go out and throw 55 touchdowns in the regular season. But guess what? You're still going to have to play the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl, and you see what happens. So that's kind of where I stand on Peyton Manning, y'all. I mean, he's still one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time, but he ain't number one. And this just confirmed it.
Yeah, I woke up and wrote this for my haters, man. 40's on that thing with a 454. I see you later, man. Bitches wanna bop, turn about that pussy for this paper, man. Hold this for a quick, so I backseat escalator, man. Thugger, and if you in need, then you do the same. Got some problems going life for the thing we do for the change. Driving cause my big homie told me switch up my lane. Need a trap to get you stuck in the grave and locked in a cave, man. Yeah, I put my ski mask on and fuck the game up. Staying on this stuff shit, bitch, I fuck the game up. And you know this trap shit ain't gon' fucking change up. Real Midwest gangsters hit your club and flame up. Numb and hollow shit for my enemies, like, yeah, fuck you pussy. pussy boys in the industry. Like, yeah, fuck the records, I'm knee deep in the street. This white girl on my phone, keep the Nikes up on my niece's feet. Like, yeah, I jumped off in the streets and fuck the game up. 4G's on everything, I fuck the game up. Woke up and wrote this for my fucking haters. That hate the way a nigga came up. I jumped off in the streets and fuck it, came up. 4G's on everything, I fuck the game up. Woke up and wrote this for my fucking haters. That hate the way a nigga came up. I'm never coming down. Nigga ain't had shit, set the bench. Now bitch, I run the town. Heard niggas in the street want me hit. Heard I can't come around. Niggas stepped off through your event. Yeah, bitch, I shut it down. Thuggin'. And if you with me, you be on the job. Private party, 50 freaks in the suite. For me, yeah, my squad. Me and my partners, yeah, we deep in the streets. Blessed in the mob. Had a top of thing. Go be down your block and then be top, man. Yeah, I stepped off in the booth and fucking came up. Every tape I dropped, made these little niggas step their game up. Nigga heard Young Gib, never seen Miss Flo, that changed up. But I don't give no fuck, little nigga, my dues been paid up. Number hollow tips for my enemies, like, yeah. Fuck you pussy boys in this industry, like, yeah. Fuck your records, I'm knee deep in the street. Yeah, white girl on my phone, nigga, whip it up if you feeling me, like, yeah. I jumped off in the streets and fuck the game up. 4G's on everything, I fuck the game up. Woke up and wrote this for my fucking haters. That hate the way a nigga came up. I jumped off in the streets and fuck the game up. 4G's on everything, I fuck the game up. Woke up and wrote this for my fucking haters. That hate the way a nigga came up.
Yes, sir. Back at it again. JB Hicks here with the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Please go to our website, hiphopsportsreport.com. I appreciate all the love and support. By the way, we actually had a huge week this past week. I think going from, the end of January through the first week of February, we had, I think, our greatest week of traffic in the history of the website. So thank you for everybody that made that possible. Shout out to all the new Twitter followers out there at @HHSReport. That's where you can hit us up. And right now, I'd like to get into a little interview segment, bringing on a very special guest who was supposed to be the first guest originally on the podcast back in December. That fell through, but we did get his daughter on the podcast 2 weeks ago, if you recall. So she's actually the first official guest in the history of the podcast. But now we're just going to have to settle for her father. That would be my brother. He goes by the name of Kenneth Hicks Jr., and he's going to be joining us to talk a little football and a little hip-hop. Welcome to the podcast, Kenneth. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It's a great opportunity.
You don't have to kiss the butt of the host. I mean, come on. I mean, you've seen me with my shirt off. You've beaten me up before for many years. I mean, you don't have to kiss my behind. I'm just saying, like, you can, if you want to kiss my ass, so be it. I'm just saying, like, you don't have to do that.
I haven't beaten you up since 2012, so we don't have to go back in old times.
Ah, I thought you were going to bring that up. Okay, moving right along. Yeah, let's get into some football talk. That sounds like a perfect segue. The Super Bowl, I think it was 43-8 was the final. Seattle.
And there was much defecation.
yes. So, what are your thoughts on the Super Bowl? I know there's a lot of talk about Seattle, you know, can they be a dynasty, or, you know, can teams run the Seattle system or do what they did to Peyton Manning? Can other teams replicate that? Do you have any thoughts on that, or just the thoughts on the Super Bowl in general?
Oh, man, it was a brutal game to watch, man, to be honest with you. You know, like any other red-blooded American, I was excited to watch the Super Bowl. I thought it was going to be a matchup for the ages. I am not a Peyton Manning fan, per se, but, you know, I have tremendous respect for him, as we all do. And, you know, I respected the Broncos' offense, and I really thought that this was going to be just a game of, you know, the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. And, I really just expected something that was going to be a real clash of the Titans, so to speak. and we got anything but that. They were just simply outclassed in every way, shape, form, and fashion. And, you know, I think that at the end of the day, what I took away from it was the fact that I think that Seattle is very much the real deal. If you had any, if you needed any more confirmation, I guess, you know, Super Bowl rings would count for that. And I think that right now we're at a point that we honestly could be on the verge of looking at a future dynasty. I understand that. I know that in relation to the way that contracts are going these days and how hard it is to keep the core of a team together now is much harder than it was, say, back in the 80s or the 90s. So it's harder to keep your same players, you know, in the same uniform year after year. But that aside, you know, you got a team of young players, of hungry players. You got you know, a great coach here that's really seasoned in Fitzgerald. And with all that said, I just really think that, you know, if we have any chance of seeing a dynasty within the next coming years, I think this is about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my biggest takeaways from the Super Bowl was you can go a long way in this league by playing defense and not beating yourself. And I think that's a testament to Russell Wilson. The guy doesn't turn the ball over. He doesn't make mistakes. The guy's a nerd, man. He's a total nerd on the court, on the field, and he is off the field. And I love every bit of it. I think he's great. You know, you saw him sitting courtside with Hove after he won the Super Bowl, nerded up in a suit from head to toe, like Jay-Z's got on jeans and a sweatshirt or whatever, and this guy's got on a full suit. That's just how he is, man. That's just how he carries himself. I think it's dope. But he doesn't make mistakes. Russell Wilson just does not make mistakes. And when you don't beat yourself, that's half the battle. I've always said if you play hard and play smart, that's half the battle. Any little bit of talent or X's and O's beyond that, and you'll probably start seeing some success on the field. And so, yeah, I don't know if Seattle can turn it into a dynasty because, to your point, it's going to be extremely difficult to keep those guys together. I know Golden Tate, the receiver, came out today and said that he was willing to take a hometown discount. So, I mean, I don't know if how likely that is that more guys will do that. Maybe they'll all buy in to the team and to John Schneider, the general manager, and to Pete Carroll, and they'll all be willing to sacrifice a little bit for the greater good, and that would be great. But you know, I don't think that there's this Seattle system that some people think is out there. Like I don't buy into that. Just like in basketball, some people said, "Oh, well, we're a young team on the rise. We're good. We stink. We're at the bottom of the top of the lottery, the bottom of the NBA standings. We're going to use the Oklahoma City model." And that became a catchphrase, the Oklahoma City model. Well, you know what Oklahoma City did? They got lucky because they had Kevin Durant at the top of the draft, and they lucked out that Portland didn't take him. But beyond that, they drafted good guys, and that's the secret. You have to draft the right guys. You have to draft and develop players. That's what Oklahoma City did, and that's what, or Seattle, right? And that's what Seattle, the Seahawks, also did. And you get these guys in, and you develop them, but you have to pick the right players. So I don't think there's really a Seattle system, but you seem to think that they can still sustain it for the long haul.
Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think that, you know, and the thing about it, too, is that, you know, they made me eat my words. I'll be the first to admit it, because at the beginning of the season, I was all on board the San Francisco 49ers bandwagon. I said, these guys are going to win the Super Bowl, and you can mark it in the books now, because I'm saying that they've already punched their tickets for February. And, you know, as the season progressed and everything, I stood by my statement. I never backed down from it. They met up in the playoffs, and the better team won. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, to your point, you know, I think that there really is something to be said for the notion of not beating yourself. And, you know, the thing about Russ Wilson is that he gets a lot of flack for being a game manager. And you know what? There's a lot of other people that are out there that are game managers, and you know what? They got rings, too. So, I mean, if, you know, if he's a game manager, Joey Flacco is a game manager, Eli Manning's a game manager. You know, I think that if you're putting him in that category, and, you know, if you're going to put me in a category, put me in a category with winner. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, is he necessarily the greatest quarterback you're ever going to see? Probably not. I don't think so. But you know what? If he's able to get done what they need to get done, And if he's able to keep an even head and not let the fame get to him and not let the spotlight get too bright, then by all means, you know, he's the kind of quarterback that I'd want for my team.
No doubt, no doubt. I mean, and to your point, I think every good quarterback starts off as a game manager. There's nothing wrong. I don't understand this pejorative connotation with being a game manager. It doesn't really make a ton of sense, because managing the game successfully and not beating yourself is the first step to becoming a great quarterback. So even if you look at somebody like a Drew Brees, who throws for a lot of yards and throws a lot of touchdowns, in so doing, he also manages the game. And that's why he's so successful. And speaking of quarterbacks, obviously Peyton Manning was the focal point of everything this past weekend. And unfortunately for him, it did not go so well. I just basically rambled on for like 25 minutes about Peyton Manning largely and just, you know, my stance on him. And basically that game didn't really do anything for me as far as his legacy is concerned. I just feel like I thought he was one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time before the game, and I thought he was going to remain one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time after the game, regardless of the outcome. And I didn't have him moving up significantly or falling back in the pack significantly, whether or not he won or lost. To me, it didn't matter, because he's always been the same guy, and that's a guy who's going to put up monster stats, and he's going to dominate in the regular season. But when the chips are down and the stakes are high, he probably only comes up a big half the time, roughly, if that. As, you know, and in the playoffs, that's kind of how it's been. In fact, his playoff record is now back sub 500, which is what it was coming into this postseason. He's now 11-12 in the playoffs. He has more postseason losses than any starting quarterback in NFL history. And I don't think that he can be considered among the greats of the greats of the greats, if that makes sense. I just think that he is who we thought I was. All right, wait a minute. He is who I thought he was. Like Denny Green said back in the day. That's who he is. You know, now if you want to crown him, then crown his ass. But he is who I thought he was, and his playoff record of 500 essentially pretty much reflects that. What are your thoughts on Peyton Manning?
Oh, man. You know, Peyton Manning is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He is a man who deserves a good portion of the accolades and credit that he gets. You know, I think at the same time, though, realistically, when we start talking about professional athletes and we start talking about superstars and we start talking about legends, when you start getting to the legend conversation, you have to be able to stand up and stand through the fire that comes with losing. And I think that so often, you know, we live in a society now that people want to be apologists for whoever that icon of the moment is, whether it's Kobe or LeBron or Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or whoever it is, and people want to be able to find all the things and all the flaws and point them all out and, you know, give us all the mitigating factors as to why this guy didn't rise to the occasion. But when he wins, whoever this guy is, we want to then crown him, bestow upon him all the glory, and let him ride off into the sunset as our hero. And, you know, it's not really fair. It's not, you know, it's a discredit and disservice to the opposing team and what they were able to do to neutralize these athletes, in this case, Peyton Manning. I think that in his case, you know, he, for all intents and purposes, you know, he had a rather pedestrian day. I mean, he did put up good numbers, but to put up good numbers and throw, I believe, two interceptions and have your team shroud, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of irrelevant, you know. And, you know, but that's what he's been known for. He's been known for the flashy stats, the nice stat lines. You know, he's a stud. We all know that. But at the end of the day, if you can't produce when the chips are down, what do we remember you for? You know, I remember growing up watching Dan Marino. Dan Marino was an amazing player to watch. You know, I'm probably dating myself a little bit now, but, you know, he was an amazing player to watch when I was growing up. You know, but, you know, I don't have great Dan Marino moments. I don't have great Dan Marino memories. You know why? Because he spent most of the playoffs every year the same way I did, watching it at home. And, I think that Peyton Manning, I think that, you know, he is one of the all-time greats, to your point. I think that when it's all settled and, you know, whether he hangs it up as it was, like it has been rumored that he may consider doing after this season, you know, whether he hangs it up you'll have to be able to look back at it and say, you know, he was a great quarterback. He was not the best. He was not in that Tom Brady, that Joe Montana echelon. And but we'll love him and respect him for what he contributed to the game.
I think that's well said. And you know, to rehash the stats from the game, Peyton had two interceptions, the one touchdown pass with the 2-point conversion, and he lost a fumble in that game. And he just looked pretty much rattled the entire night. And you know, I mean, it was a very un-Peyton-like performance if you compare it to everything else he did earlier this season. But my biggest thing is I just feel like the guy gets anointed by people because people love to love Peyton Manning. And I just feel like that's the crux of the debate, is that people, you know, and you kind of referenced it too, that people just put him on a pedestal and they just refuse to take shots at him. He's almost Teflon in a lot of circles. But when he's winning and when things are going right, you don't hear anybody talking about the offensive line playing well. You don't hear anybody talking about the defense doing their job. You don't hear anybody talking about the receivers with the run after the catch. You don't hear about the great coaching job that was done. All you hear about is number 18 and he's barking out orders at the line of scrimmage and all that type of stuff. And he, again, to your point, he deserves a lot of those accolades, but it's just interesting that, you know, when things go wrong, people don't want to hold him accountable oftentimes, and I just don't really agree with that. But moving right along, I wanted to shout out Fahrenheit once again. You can follow him on Twitter at Fahrenheit, Fahrenheit. And he came on the podcast last week, and he was dropping jewels, y'all. It was fantastic. I can't encourage you enough. If you haven't heard it already, go back and listen to last week's HHSR podcast with Fahrenheit, where he talks about the Grammy process, how the voting works, who does the voting, why, you know, whether or not Kendrick Lamar got robbed, and if so, how that happened. And we talked about Macklemore. We just talked hip hop, y'all. It's just a great, great podcast. I can't recommend it highly enough. Kenny, you were one of the first people to hear the podcast from last week. I wanted to get your thoughts on just everything that Fahrenheit had to say, and you know, whether or not you had had any thoughts on the Grammy process at this point. What did you learn from that interview? And what is hip hop? How accountable is hip hop for its lack of recognition at the Grammys?
Oh man, that interview actually was it was top notch. You know, and the thing is, you know, beyond, you know, my relation to you or beyond, you know, anything else, you know, I think that just as a fan of hip-hop and as somebody who just really cares about the culture, you know, to actually be able to sit back and listen to that interview and be able to kind of get it, you know, get the information from the other side of the wall. You know, I've never heard that before, you know, and, you know, I'm on hip-hop news sites literally every single day. You know, I talk hip-hop with people literally every single day of my life. Christmas, birthdays, you name it, I'm talking hip-hop with somebody. So to actually be able to sit down and listen to this podcast and actually hear somebody explain something that I could not get from anywhere else on the internet was actually really special to me. And I appreciated the interview. Now, in regards to what Fahrenheit was actually talking about, you know, I think that he actually said some really enlightening things. He said he's dropping gems. You know, I didn't know, you know, exactly what was the process as far as how people became actual, you know, voters for the Grammys. I didn't know that. Furthermore, I also did not know that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that's an easy thing to do, but, you know, it is definitely something that, you know, it sounds like pretty much any one of your favorite artists could do it. So that being said, you know, it was interesting to me just to know that, you know, we have a situation here where, you know, hip hop seems to, you know, constantly feel like it's been underrepresented and underserved at the Grammys, and you know, people are kind of, you know, rolling their eyes every single year and sucking their teeth because nobody seems to be happy with the final outcome at the Grammys. Yet we all watch it, you know. But that being said, you know, to see that it actually is, you know, highly feasible for, you know, pretty much anybody that's respected in the industry to actually become a Grammy voter. And then, you know, but to know that so few actually do. And, you know, to understand that, then it made everything so much clearer. Because, it becomes a situation where, of course, you're going to be underserved if you're not actually speaking out on this. It's just like, when people talk about presidential elections or things of that nature, or even like local elections. People say that, if you aren't one of the people who's actually voting, you really don't really have much of a place to complain. Because you're not, because you actually had an opportunity to maybe go with things have things go a different way. You elected not to. And, at some point, you just have to deal with the consequences of your inaction. So to know that, the actual hip-hop community, as we know it, not so much us as fans, but, actual MCs that actually have products that are bar scanned in stores or online and available for purchase, these people are the ones that actually have the ability to get the awards to people who deserve them, yet they don't necessarily do the things that they necessarily could do to make that happen. It was just eye-opening, very eye-opening. And, I, again, shout out to Fahrenheit. I think that it was definitely a very good podcast, and I think that, moving forward, we need to start wondering about, it becomes a matter of one or two things. Either A, we need to start looking at the Grammys and just accepting it for what it is and saying, okay, well, this is not our award show because the people who really care about the culture are not the ones voting for it. Or B, we need to, start activating and motivating ourselves to actually, get involved, and maybe we can actually have something that's a true reflection of the hip-hop community and not just of pop culture.
You think black people need to mobilize for a greater good? Say what?
Greater good being getting Kendrick Lamar some shine.
Yeah, I mean that hasn't happened since like the 60s, right? I mean, man, when's the last time that happened? I think you're right on the money, though. It's still so easy to hate the Grammys and hold them accountable. But I think what Fahrenheit did was he opened the veil a little bit and he shed some light on the process. And it makes sense. I mean, I think, It makes sense, the socioeconomic impact of it and the numbers game of just, this the fact that these people that are considered themselves members of the hip-hop community that are not involved in the process or either don't care to be. They care enough to complain about the award show, but they don't care enough to actually get involved with the process. It is what it is, y'all. I mean, you reap what you sow, right? So I think that's kind of where that stands. But again, it was just a very dope interview. And, was there anything else you wanted to add on that?
Honestly, congratulations to McElroy, man. I'm not a hater. I think that, you got to respect somebody for what they do and their craftsmanship and their hard work. I love Kendrick Lamar's album. I think that it was the album of the year, as far as hip-hop is concerned anyway. But I'm not going to sit here and ridicule somebody else for making something that's not necessarily my cup of tea. I think that, he was able to reach people, and he had subject matter and content, he made, I guess in the same way maybe Russ Wilson is able to manage the game, I guess maybe Ryan Lewis managed the CD. And, he didn't necessarily give him, the Just Blaze treatment or the Boy Wonder treatment, or the Mike Will made a treatment, but he gave them stuff that complemented what he was trying to do and what they were trying to do. So, again, shout out to those guys. They did what they're supposed to do, and they made a CD that, is resonating with a lot of people.
Everything's coming up Seattle. This is just their time. It's just their time. We just got to step back and just let it happen. And this is Seattle's time to shine. So, shout out to Jason Terry and Nate Robinson. And the Crawford brothers, those are all the hoopers that I can think of that are from Seattle. And, this is just their time to shine, I guess. And Macklemore's getting that bread, too. I mean, that can't be overlooked because that they released the heist on, like, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis LLC or something like that. Like, they're getting all that dough, So more power to them, y'all. Get that money. One thing I wanted to touch on with you was perusing the news, the hip hop news of the day, or I should say of the week. I noticed the Eminem and Slaughterhouse are trying to do the battle rap tournament. It's called Total Slaughter. This has been done before. I mean, obviously, we had, like, the Rap Olympics back in the day, and then we had the Blaze Battle on HBO. That was short-lived. And we've had the different TV shows. The one show on MTV2, the name of it escapes me. Fight Club, that's what it was called. You know, we had that. And so, they've been trying to do this for some time, these battle rap tournaments. And for some reason, they can never sustain. Eminem is a pretty big name in hip-hop, obviously. And Slaughterhouse, those are four other names in hip-hop. I wouldn't call any of them big names, but those are four other guys. And they're great, great rappers, all of them. So, I mean, lyrically, those guys are on point. So I don't want to act like I'm clowning them because they can actually rhyme. But when I'm looking at this roster, and if you follow the battle rap scene at all, there's some recognizable names that are supposed to be, as of right now, a part of this tournament. We have like Disaster, Math Hoffa. We all remember Math Hoffa, right? Arsenal, Big T, A-Verb. So, you know, there's some names there from what I'm seeing. Do you think, Kenny, that this can sustain? First of all, do you think it's going to be hot, first of all? And second of all, can it last? Can this thing be here to stay for once?
It can. It can sustain. It can be hot. First of all, anything, it's hard to bet against anything that Marshall puts his stamp on. So that being said alone, people will check it out just because he's behind it. I don't know exactly what the end goal of all of this is. Like, I don't know. It's like, is the prize you get a record deal? Is the prize that you're just, crowned the best battle rapper in the world or something, or in the universe? I don't know if you're supposed to get on the Slaughterhouse album. I'm not quite sure what the actual, end goal of the championship of this is supposed to be. They definitely have some very strong names in there. I think it could be good, though. I think that, the thing is that, I know some people that like battle rap more than others, but I think that, by and large, most people, they enjoy seeing a good battle. If you're a true hip-hop head, then, at some point, you're definitely going to want to see a good battle, whether it's, outside your barbershop or at your high school or, on the internet. You're gonna tune in for that. So I think that, putting lyrics on a major stage, like, cable television, I think it's always a good thing, anything that's going to encourage people to, to rhyme and actually set their bars up, and people will be creative and not, just fall into the same, trapping, no pun intended, that most other rappers fall into nowadays, as far as just, making swag rap and trap music and all sort of stuff, being able to get out there and actually just rhyme and be creative and just, have fun with it. I think that that's always a good thing. So I'm kind of interested, and I hope that it turns out well. I think that, they got some very strong names of people behind it, namely Slaughterhouse and Eminem. I think that it could work out well. I don't know how that would translate to Slaughterhouse, in a personal setting. Like, I don't know if they're going to get any more album sales behind it or if they'll get any more popular themselves, but, if the actual culture of rhyming and lyricism gets more popular, I have to think that would, benefit Slaughterhouse in the long run.
They're all going to become television producers. That's what's in it for them. You're gonna see, Crooked Eye Productions. I think that's what's the end game. No, I don't know. This is not even going to be on television. At least not initially. The Total Slaughter tournament is going to be on Eminem's Vivo channel, and then from there, the two finalists are going to be the opening bout for a rematch between Murder Mook and Loaded Lux, which they fought like in like a clothing store like 10 years ago. I shouldn't say fought. They battled. They battled in like a clothing store 10 years ago or something like that. It was like oversized basketball jerseys and the whole nine, like wave do-rags under the fitted. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how long ago that first battle was. So I guess they're going to rematch, which is interesting because Loaded Lux just battled Hollow to Don last week, and personally, I think Hollow won that battle. I talked to some people that felt like Lux won the battle. I thought Lux's third verse was fire when he basically picked apart Hollow for being a dope fiend or, you know, always sipping lean or whatever, but I thought Hollow had the more impactful punchlines, and I felt like he had the audience throughout the entire battle, so I probably would have gave it 2-1 Hollow on that battle. But Loaded Lux is considered by many to be the greatest battle rapper ever. And so he's going to be taking on Murder Mook, it looks like, in a rematch. I mean, I don't know, man. I think it'll be dope. As long as they're keeping it online, I think it'll be dope. But they did say that they're also going to be doing a reality show based around it. Like, so I guess, so they're going to try to turn it into a reality show, I guess, after all the battles are said and done and the smoke clears. So it should be fascinating to see, man. I mean, it should be fun. I love battle rap. I've watched battle rap videos. I'll lose a whole day watching them, so I think it's pretty fascinating stuff, and I think it's just at its core, it's hip hop at its very core, at its very essence, and that's what I love about it personally. Any other thing you wanted to get on off your chest, Kenny, regarding just the hip hop scene right now? Anything in particular you want to talk about before you get out of here?
I just love the culture, man. I always have. You know, I remember first getting exposed to it at my babysitter's house. You know, I was probably in the third grade or so, and you know, I sit there after school and watch Young TV Raps every day, with Dr. Dre and Ed Lover. And I remember coming home and trying to watch Young TV Raps in my parents' house, and them telling me to turn that crap off. since about that point in time in my life, I've always had a real passion and love for the music and the culture, and it's always been interesting to me. I just came back. I went to a Currency concert past Saturday. It was great. I had a great time. I've been wanting to see Currency since 2008. That was when I first got introduced to his music. And finally seeing him in concert for the first time was actually a pretty cool experience for me. My girlfriend went with me, and, it was a great show. But like I said, people say a lot about the culture and about the music, and, people hang their hats on that one guy that they don't like for whatever reason, because he sounds too Southern or too East Coast or too old school or words don't rhyme or whatever the case may be. And the thing is that I say that the beauty of hip-hop, especially in this day and age, is that, with the Internet, with the advent of the Internet, we live in an era that, pretty much anybody can make music. And not everybody's going to be good, but, there's so much music out there and there's so much content that somebody out there is making good music. So chances are, if you can't find anybody that's new that's making good music, it's probably because you're not looking hard. But, at the end of the day, it's still just music. Just enjoy it, have fun with it, live your life to it, go through your hard times, help it pull you through it, celebrate your good times with it, and just love hip-hop, y'all.
There we go. Kenny is an advocate of music. Thank you. And specifically hip-hop music. I'll just mess with you, man. We're going to get you back on the podcast soon when we have a little bit more time to talk. But we got to cut this one short and get up out of here. So thank you for joining us, Kenny. Anything you want to plug real quick?
I'm going to save my plugs for a later time, man. I'm a published author. I got some books coming out. I got some other things I'm working on. But, shout out to the B-team. Shout out. Man, I just really turned this into a radio interview.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. This may not even make the podcast. This could get edited out, but, I just wanted to give you the opportunity.
It's all good. I don't get a platform like this that often, so shout out to the B-team. Shout out to Obelisk Media Group. Like I said, we got some more books and stuff coming, but, it's going to be a productive year for us here, but I'll get to more of that hopefully at a later time.
No doubt, man. Thank you for joining us this evening, and thank you all for listening. I appreciate it. Talked a lot about football today, and unfortunately, football is gone, y'all. I mean, we'll come back around. We'll bring it back around for the draft, but it sucks, man. Football's going to be gone for a little while, and we're stuck with basketball, and I love basketball, but this season's been whack. Why has it been whack? I wrote a whole article about it on hiphopsportsreport.com. Please check that out. Thank you for joining us, Kenny. Make sure you check us out on Twitter, at HHSReport. Thanks for joining us this evening. We out of here, y'all. Peace.
A fucked up childhood is right the way I am. State where I don't give a damn. Somebody help me, but nah, they don't hear me though. I guess I'll be another victim of the ghetto. Ain't no escaping, cause I'm way too young. Pops is
dealing. And on top of that, got mom sprung, scheming off the top. Pops never figured that he'd go down by the hands of another nigga. Now my pops is gone and that ain't no good. Got to follow in the footsteps of the homies from the hood. And was the role model? Niggas putting poop in my fucking baby bottle. Damn, and through all the motherfucking pain, they done drove my mom's insane. So I guess I gotta do work so I ain't finished. I grow up to be a straight up menace. Shia. Come on, y'all. Straight up menace. Now I'm of age and living in the projects, getting paid off the clerks and the county checks. I'm telling you, fresh out of high school, never did I wonder that the motherfucking hood would take me under. Gee, I'm kicking it with the homies and they got the straps off to the corner store owned by the fucking. See a bitch in the right lane, so I comes with the Mac. Astro Van pulls a motherfucking jack from the back. Now he's got the strap to my homie's head, saying play this shit cool and don't be a fool. He shot my nigga in the fucking head. I caught one in the shoulder. If I didn't run, I was dead. Now I'm laying in the hospital bed, thinking about them punk motherfuckers, and my eyes is bloodshot red. Gee, motherfuckers, I ain't finished. Be on the lookout for this straight up menace. Shit. Who's down? I guess I'm finished. I go out like a straight up menace. Cheer.